As consumers, we are bombarded by it at every turn. Like the Incredible Hulk being bombarded by gamma rays. But what makes some media endure, while others are banished to the forgotten black hole of obscurity, never to be heard from again? Who or what decides this? Hetero life mates Steve and Yehel want to know, and they want to know now. This is Obscurity Now.
And what's up, Obscurians? It's time for another episode of Obscurity Now, the show where we take a look at weird and almost forgotten pieces of media, and we decide they should be remembered for all of human history, or tossed into the black void of obscurity, never to be heard from again. My name is Steve, and with me, it's sort of Yehel, but not exactly Yehel, because Fox owns the internet, the
YouTube rights.
Yes, to Yehel, so it's Yehel X, everyone.
Yes. How are you doing, Steve?
I'm doing great. Please, it's not Steve. I too am owned by a corporate entity. It's X Steve. Yeah.
I see. Yeah. Mutant X. Real interesting show we're covering today. I remember hearing about this, but I feel like I may have even seen some commercials about it, but I never watched it. Did you?
No, I did not. I'd imagine a lot of people's thought at the time is like, this is trying to be the X-Men, but it's not, so why would I want to watch it? And I think that was my thought at the time. How about yourself?
Yeah, I probably thought some. I mean, I'm to be honest, I'm assuming that, because I looked up some commercials for it, that I saw the commercials, and I was like, well, this doesn't look good, and skipped out of it. The only thing that might have made me interested in it, because it gave me a little bit of hope this time, was that John Shea is in it.
Right.
Who I really liked. He was Lex Luthor in Lois and Clark, The Avengers Superman. I thought he did a great job on that show, but it was obviously like a well-written, well-produced show anyway. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was when I was watching the pilot episode, which that's what we are covering today, dear listeners. You can go watch it right now for free on YouTube. Who'd have thought it would be
in great quality.
Yeah, it was great quality. But yeah, I was watching him the whole time. I'm like, where do I recognize that guy from? Because, you know, I look up the info after I watch it. And yeah, when I was reading through it, I was like, oh yeah, Lex Luthor from Lois and Clark. So he was just keeping that comic book superhero sort of thing going from Lois and Clark to Mutant X. Which show do you think was more popular?
Lois and Clark, I'm sure. However, I was pretty surprised to see that this got, I can't remember if it was three or four seasons. I think three seasons, 66 episodes in total. Yeah, over three seasons. Quite surprising, especially when, not that the IMDb ratings are like everything on the episode ratings, but I think they tend to generally be a pretty good indicator of how good a particular episode is. Mm-hmm. And like, you're lucky. It's not often that you come across, like, basically IMDb will tell you for each season, like, which are like the three highest rated shows of that season. And usually those will be like eights, maybe a nine, low sixes.
Why, it sounds like my dates back in the early 2000s. Hey-o!
Yeah. So, yeah,
There were no dates. I'm lying, everyone. I was reading that the ratings were actually, I mean, aside from the middling IMDb ones, that throughout the show's lifespan, they were pretty high. And spoiler alert, the show does indeed get canceled, and it ends on a cliffhanger. And even towards the end, the ratings were high. So somebody was watching this thing.
Comic book nerds that didn't have there weren't a lot of options, you know, for live action comic book inspired, I guess, you could say, media back then.
I was going to say,
not that there weren't any, but like now it's like, I mean, there's so much.
Oh, yeah. You can't swing a dead cat without hitting a Marvel show or Disney Plus Marvel show, that is.
Well, even the final episode, like on IMDb, it's rated a 6.1. And that's an amalgamation of 57 individual ratings. So yeah, I mean, generally, when looking at IMDb ratings for just about any show, you'll see that like the finales tend to be rated higher, because you know, usually it's a culmination of something, so people feel like there's some kind of payoff. Yeah, didn't bode well. I did think while I was watching it, I'm like, who directed and edited this? A can of Mountain Dew in association with Surge? Like, what? This is like the most early 2000s aesthetic looking piece of television I can remember watching in a long, long time.
Oh, yeah. This show is definitely a time capsule, which we are going to see for sure. And the guy who directed it, he is basically Mr. TV syndicated Canadian director guy, because he's worked on so many other things that we've already covered. And right. Yeah, hold on. I just need 1 second to get my notes back. But yeah.
Well, I know he worked on RoboCop Prime Directives. The production series. Company.
Right, right.
He did the series, but this is the same production company.
Good Eye.
That did Prime Directives.
Yep, this is Fireworks Entertainment. And the reason why, you know, you were speaking about the finale not being that high, and I think it's because they didn't realize it was going to be a finale, because Fireworks Entertainment ran out of business, and so they couldn't make any more Mutant X because they were no more. And I guess nobody...
Yeah, but generally you want your... Because, you know, obviously they were trying to have this series, the season finale, be something good to make people come back, because that's why you do a cliffhanger. So I would argue they still did not succeed.
Sure. I mean, and I guess if it was really going great, then someone else could have been like, oh, that Mutant X is looking fantastic, let's buy him up and we'll continue the story on. So I don't know, maybe for syndication their reviews were good enough to keep it going for the time. I mean, that's what it looks like from this end. But for now, let's dive a little bit deeper into the Mutant X pilot. What do you say?
Let's do it.
Welcome to your feature presentation.
But yeah, I think the real question for Mutant X here, or people who might watch it, is how much do you love the X-Men or the world of the X-Men? And how badly, like, do you, like, after, like, let's say you watch the movie and you read the comics, and so now you're like, man, I really want to see some more X-Men meet. And I guess the, was the cartoon still going on at this time?
I'll check on that. But I mean, it
Yeah. So basically, the answer is you'd have to be, or at least I feel like, you would have to really love the X-Men to want to watch this.
Yeah, the final episode of the X-Men animated series ended in 1997. Duh, that's why the new one's called X-Men 97.
Duh. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's pretty much the whole reason why we're covering Mutant X. Of course, if you've been living under a rock, you might have missed that Disney has announced X-Men 97, where they're going back and picking up where the previous X-Men, the animated series, left off. If you want to hear us talk about the original X-Men animated show, we sort of had an episode on it, like way back, like the first 10 episodes when we started. Definitely check that out. So what I want to know from you, Yahel, is are you excited about X-Men 97? What are your thoughts?
I actually am. I mean, I'm being cautiously optimistic, like with anything new. I don't think I'm as cynical as some other people that host this podcast when it comes to new stuff.
You must be talking about Larry, the new guy.
Yeah, and, you know, ultimately, I mean, it's still a kid's cartoon, just like the original one was, so I think you have to look at it through that lens as well. Mm-hmm. But I think I am going to check it out, at least, and go into it with an open mind. I saw people, it's so weird, I saw people complaining that, and they were going off, like, literally one frame that like Rogue's ass is like flatter now than it used to be.
Oh man, and this is.
But what's wild? What is wild to me is that the same people complaining. I mean, it's a bunch of far right people complaining about this, which is so strange that the same group of people that are constantly concerned about protecting kids and this and that are upset that a kid's cartoon isn't sexualized enough for them now.
How do you know that it's just far right and not just people who are really into ass?
Because all you have to do is click, because their complaint is always like, oh, this is what woke Disney has done. Because that's like what they always write. And there's only one group of people that complains about woke Disney generally, so. And you can just click on their profile and see their brightly gold, highly they're anticipating bright gold gaudy sneakers from a 78-year-old man. But
what? Whoa.
You didn't
what?
See the Trump sneakers?
No,
Trump now, he's selling these like gold. He went to like some sneaker convention.
Oh my god!
And was like being like, I know you guys here are sneaker heads. And like, you know, half the crowd was booing. There were he still had, you know, some people cheering, of course. Mm-hmm. But yeah, the shoes are just like gold foil. They look like a Rob Liefeld new number one Image comic book cover. They're just like gold foil everywhere. They're gaudy. They're a Rob Liefeld number one.
Thank you for putting it in terms that I completely understand.
Yeah. And Rob, we love you.
But just for the record, I too hate woke Disney, but I am not far right. But I just hate Disney in general, mostly.
You just hate things. You just don't want to like enjoy watching.
No,
anything.
Look, much like yourself, I am at least gonna check it out. But I mean, I don't know about you, but I don't even remember like the last couple seasons of X-Men 97. Can you even remember?
I remember they had changed. I'm gonna go back and rewatch it. I actually watched like the first few seasons of X-Men the animated series like 5 or 6 years ago. It like popped up on Prime, I think. It must have been longer actually, because it was before Disney Plus was a thing. Mm-hmm. But and it held up pretty well. I mean, I will say, watching it as an adult, you could definitely, I definitely felt, oh, okay, yeah, this is definitely like a kid's show. Mm-hmm. More adult themed than most kids cartoons, especially at the time, but it's a show for kids, you know?
Yeah.
But, I just remember like the last few seasons, they changed the art style. Mm-hmm. I think they changed the production company. Yep. And I remember, I think like they changed a couple voice actors, and that kind of turned me off from it as a kid. Mm-hmm. So I'm not even sure if I finished it.
Right. See, I don't think I had either. It's very possible that I could have started playing soccer or something, and was just not around on Saturday mornings to watch it anymore. But yeah, I don't know. That doesn't sound like a terrible idea to go back and try to watch some of it.
You know what we should do? Maybe we should watch cover the first episode of the 1997 season of the X-Men animated series. Maybe like the first episode of the last season.
Wait, of the new one or the original? Wait,
no.
First
the
episode
original
of
one.
The last original. All right. I gotcha. Yeah. We could definitely look into that. And
or we could watch the last episode, I guess. But I'd rather not be spoiled.
And we could talk about the new one when it comes out, because I do intend on watching it. As you said, I am cautiously optimistic. I mean, I don't know. I have a feeling. I feel like when companies try to go back to the well like this, like there's a lot of hype built up and everyone's like really into it for maybe like a few episodes, then after a while it's just like, oh yeah, this isn't as good, and then they go back to their regular daily lives.
Yeah, it's a bit of a catch 22, right? Because it's like you get that initial hype built in, but when it's something as good as the original X-Men animated series was, that it's tough to live up to that bar. And even if this show ends up being pretty good, I mean, chances are it's not going to be as good as the 92 one. And part of that, too, I think, is like it was a novelty back then.
Sure.
Not that the show wasn't good, but, you know, you just hadn't really seen something like that.
No, yeah, exactly. I mean, it was a well-written superhero show for like 12 to like 14 year olds, basically, or at least they treated their audience a little bit more maturely than like the Justice League of the 60s did, or
yeah,
something like that.
I would say even 9 to 10 year olds it was geared at, just with some of the things they did. But yeah, like to your point, they still treated you like you would be smart enough, even if you were like on the younger end of their viewership, to understand a little bit more complex story. They had ongoing storylines. Mm-hmm. They tackled some, you know, pretty serious issues on it.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, those.
But now,
what's that?
Cartoons do that stuff all the time now. So, you know, and it's already been, you know, we've already seen a good X-Men animated
right.
show. So,
I mean, I would argue that there is no sort of action or animated action, like for North America, at least, like we used to see in the 90s. Like there was so much back then, as we've talked about and covered. You know, you had X-Men, Wildcats, Ultra Force, Cadillacs and Dinosaurs, all like adventure stuff for, I don't know, the 9 to 14 year old demographic or whatever. And of course, did I say Exo Squad? Now, like, all right, let's pretend that there isn't an X-Men 97 coming out. Like, what is there? Like,
Well, I mean, I don't know, because I don't have kids. And
right. Well, I mean, there isn't anything. There's a stuff for little kids. And then, you know, Warner Brothers, they crap out an animated movie every couple of years, which are sometimes pretty good. But we should definitely check it out one way or the other. I mean, I want it to be good, but we shall see.
I suspect it'll be decent to pretty good. But it's never going to hit that high of X-Men 92, and I'm not counting on it, so my expectations are pretty low.
I think, like, if they actually wanted to get more than one season out of it, they would have to appeal. I mean, we're all adults now, all of us who watched it back in the 90s. And, you know, I'm not saying it has to be, like, over the top with, like, violence and gore or anything, but the writing would have to appeal more to adults. And Disney is not going to do that. They are not going to do that.
I mean, I think as long as they have it, because as long as they have the writing be in the same vein as X-Men 92, I think that show threaded the line pretty well between adult themes, but still being, you know, something as a parent that you'd be like, oh, I can't have my kid watch that, you know? Mm-hmm. So we'll see. But yeah, I mean, it's a difficult line to thread. It's kind of amazing that they were ever able to thread the line begin with. I will say that I did notice that X-Men 97, it's rated TV-14. Mm-hmm. So that does make me think that they're going to lean into more of the adult-oriented stories, or at least keep them around.
What do you think about the fact that apparently, all right, that there's like I guess a scene in the trailer where they take some of the moves from some of the video games or something. Like, did you hear about that?
Like from the X-Men versus Marvel, or Marvel versus Capcom, rather?
I think it's later than that. Because I would have there's like a scene where Gambit is riding on Wolverine's back and he charges his claws. And someone said that that is from some X-Men game that I had never played.
It might be, man, I think that does happen in one of the Marvel versus Capcom games where you can team up, where you pick like two or three players and you can switch them out and there's like double team moves. That might be one of them, but I didn't even think about it that way. You know, I actually thought it was like an homage to how like Wolverine would like ride on the back of Colossus.
Sure.
And I thought they were just in the comics, and I thought they were just playing around. Yeah, I'm watching now like that scene in the trailer. So I thought it was actually a little throwback with that, but I don't care if it's from a video. If it's cool and it works in the story, and you know, I'm sure there's a lot of like kids that haven't read comics, the comics, and know it from the video games and the movies.
Kids need to grow up
it.
And read a comic.
Well, maybe this will make them read
so.
A comic, but
I really hope so.
But yeah, why not like put something from a video again, as long as it makes sense
sure.
within the story that they're telling. I don't mind.
All right, I agree. All right, so let's get back to the much less popular.
I can't wait for in a month when we like, or I don't know when this thing comes out, after it comes out, we talk about it, we just bitch about it.
Ah, me too. Me too. All right. So
we're just like, oh, God.
Mutant X.
They should have made her ass bigger. Everybody was right.
I just love how the internet has banded together to defend Rogue's ass. Like, out of all the things in the world to bring us together, It was a fake woman's animated ass that brought it.
I don't know if it's bringing people together. It's pretty like it's basically people that care about it too much and people that are like, what? Who cares? You know, what I thought people were going to be complaining about, and I'm shocked I at least haven't seen anybody complain about it, is that they're using the same theme song, but they redid it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as guitar heavy. It's more like I don't know, some kind of synth, but it doesn't sound like synth,
mm-hmm.
but it's more electronic. So I was sure that people were going to be like, oh, this song's not like as heavy as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But no, people just want big ass for kids.
Rogue's ass is more important than music, you hell. Come on.
And the thing is, like, Rogue's ass was not usually like it's like the one time her ass is like real bulbous in the animated series.
Right,
it wasn't like that all the time.
So it's... Yeah, it's bizarre or interesting.
It's not like that. Like people were like, "Oh, they're trying to make it look like a man." I'm like, "She has breasts in X-Men 97. What are you talking about?"
And
they're not trying to.
And that, like, those people who are obsessed with animated Rogue's ass obviously never read any of the Jim Lee X-Men comic books, because everyone is just like, they're beyond tens. Like, everyone's asses and their proportions are just amazing. Like, you can't get better than like Jim Lee X-Men.
You're 100% right. Whether you're a man, a woman, an interplanetary being, Galactus.
The brood,
you have a great ass. The brood.
Exactly. No, it's true. That's just that's how people look in Jim Lee's mind. It's just how it is. So, all right, man, we could talk about this.
He just sees the best in all of us.
Oh man, how much would it cost for him to do our like podcast artwork? Probably more than I have to afford. And
he seems like the kind of guy who has so much money now, the only way you can get him to do anything is if it interests him.
Yeah. Well, maybe one day he'll find us. I mean, hey, I keep running into Rob Liefeld and all these like random Facebook groups. Like, why not Jim Lee? But yeah, speaking of Liefeld,
he's sane.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, he doesn't care what people say about him online.
He's not unstable.
Yeah, exactly. And speaking of Rob Liefeld, I don't know. I sort of have something to mention about him at the end, but actually, it really doesn't have anything to do with him. You know what? I'll just go ahead and announce it now. So I'm gonna go back to Kickstarter for issue 3 of Escape to Earth, and I've got a homage cover to. It's Incredible Hulk. I can't remember the number, but it's got Wolverine on the cover, and his claws are extended, and you can see the Hulk's reflection in his claws. Do you know that cover at all?
Yes, I think I do.
So, yeah, that's basically what I'm doing. It's my character, but instead of the Hulk in the reflection, it's a dinosaur. It's going to look awesome.
Oh, that's pretty cool. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
Hopefully it'll get some sales, but we'll see. All right, speaking of sales, Mutant X, here we go. Ran from 2001 to 2004, 3 seasons, 66 episodes. And
unbelievable.
Yeah, unbelievable. I mean, it was a different world back in the early 2000s.
It was John Shea's world. We were just living in it.
Now, is he married to, I guess I should have looked it up myself, but hey, you're in charge of the cast here. Is he married to Lynn Shea or Shea, as you keep saying it? She's a...
Oh, is it Shea?
I thought it was Shea, but...
I don't know.
Do you know who that is? She's in all those... Insidious movies?
No. I mean, I'm sure if I saw her face, because I've seen a few of those movies.
All right. But... Well, not important. But okay. So we are covering season 1, episode 1, The Shock of the New, and it premiered October 1st.
His wife's name is Melissa.
Okay. So they're not married. Okay. So Shock of the New premiered October
1st. Oh, wait a minute. What did you say the other one's name? Oh, no. Never mind. His other wife was named Laura.
Okay. Are we good now? Are we married? You, sir.
Did you know that he used?
Are worse than
did
Hitler.
You know that he used? This is kind of so. This is kind of interesting. I just bring this up because we, you know, I mentioned Trump earlier, but apparently John Shea, you know, he's. I'm kind of diving into. Actually, I'll save this for when I go over the cast.
Thank you.
I'll save it for my segment, Steve, because I want my segment to get those high Mutant X-esque ratings.
I would kill for those, for any of our segments. Okay, so once again. It premiered, Shock of the New, Season 1, Episode 1, premiered October 1st, 2001, and here's the synopsis. A mutant empath on the run from a mysterious government agency is rescued by a team of fellow new mutants, the group known as Mutant X. And this show was created by Avi Arad. Are you familiar with his work? I mean, you have to be. We just talked about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I mean, I know he's worked at Marvel for a long time, I know.
Yeah, I mean, he basically co-produced all of the Marvel media stuff from the 90s, like all the way, including the Sam Raimi trilogy, the early X-Men trilogy, Generation X TV movie, which we already covered, X-Men the Animated Series, Spider-Man the Animated Series, and of course, the David Hasselhoff, Nick Fury TV movie, which we also covered, and you should definitely check out if you haven't seen it. And I guess since Marvel has been bought out by Disney, he's somehow responsible for all the weird Sony Spider-Man crap that's been going on these days. A little bit of a step down there, but I'm sure that guy has more money than God himself.
I suspect he does not care that people think
so. Well, I think that's a problem with a lot of these movies is that nobody seems to care. But that's another podcast. Okay, this director, which we were briefly discussing, T.J. Scott, and he has directed Star Trek Discovery, episodes of Doom Patrol. Do you remember that Sam Raimi produced Cleopatra 2525? Mm-hmm. I think we have it on the list. Young Hercules, Xena, and the aforementioned RoboCop the series. this was written by, and this was a little fun fact for me, Howard Chaykin. Are you familiar with Howard Chaykin?
I can't say that I am.
He's basically a comic book legend, a writer, and artist. He created the indie book American Flag, and he's worked for everyone. Apparently, he had something to do with the Star Wars posters, like a design of Luke on the original Star Wars posters. And but during the 90s here, he decided to step away from comics and into Hollywood, if you will. And he wrote 10 episodes of the John Wesley Shipp Flash, which we also covered, 15 episodes of your favorite car show, Viper, and two episodes of everyone's favorite UPN show, The Sentinel, which we also need to cover someday.
I actually used to watch The Sentinel pretty regularly.
Yeah, me too.
I don't remember if it's actually any good or not, but...
right?
I suspect watching it now, I'd be like, what?
Oh, we're going to cover that someday.
Oh, he can hear from really far away? All right.
Because he hung out in the jungle for a couple of months? Yeah.
Is that what it was? I don't even remember how he got his abilities.
Yeah, he got left, or he might have been a mercenary or something. Somehow he got left in the jungle for a long time, and that enhanced all of his senses.
I thought maybe it was a UPN crossover, and Sir Mix-a-Lot did experiments on him.
Wow, that's a deep cut. I love it. And that's what the show's all about. All right. And of course, the production companies here are Marvel Studios, Fireworks Entertainment, who, as Yahel said, previously produced RoboCop Prime Directives, which we also covered. Now, do you know about the lawsuits between Fox and Marvel here because of Mutant X?
I do indeed. Did you want to discuss them?
Oh, yes, please. Let's go ahead. Tell me what you know.
Oh, well, I mean, I just know that, Fox basically sued these people because Fox, I guess they don't anymore, but they had the rights at the time to the X-Men for film and TV.
Exclusive rights. Yep, that's right.
And they felt this was infringing on their rights. Mm-hmm. To that, and basically I think Marvel countersued, and the compromise ended up being, okay, you guys can make this Mutant X show, but it can't have anything to do with the X-Men, and the promotional material can't in any way infer that it does.
Exactly right. They were originally going to have code names, but because of the lawsuit that got nixed, they were going to have black costumes, even though I feel like they already do. I mean, I guess it's just regular clothes in this, but...
They're just a lot of black leather
trench coats. Yeah, they went to the Matrix dressing rooms and just borrowed a couple of Matrix jackets or whatever. But yeah, they were going to have black leather costumes, just like in the Bryan Singer X-Men movies. But the judge was like, nope, nope, you're not doing that. And yeah, so I guess they were, and I guess there was at one point, there was some sort of logo that also had to be redesigned. But yeah, I guess they made the changes and they were allowed to move on.
Because the way I remembered it was that when they initially started promoting the show, the X had a circle around it. Or it was like just, that's how I remember it. But I mean, I may just be making that up.
Yeah. I don't remember at all. Let's see. I think that will do it for that thing. Oh, I do have their original code names that were never used. Let's see. Well, no one's going to know who we're even talking about, so I'll save that to later. So, who were some of the thespians, or should I say, like, former models who acted in Mutant X?
So, yeah, there's a pretty big cast, so I'm only going to kind of touch on the main ones. We've already kind of talked a little bit about John Shea or John Shea. Maybe it's John Shea. Who knows?
Sure.
But anyways, he plays Adam, which is basically Professor X, but without powers and with hair.
Beautiful hair.
But we were kind of talking off air. I think it was off air about how he was in Lois and Clark, The New Adventures of Superman. He played Lex Luthor there. He's great in that as Lex Luthor. I loved him in that. And what I was going to mention earlier is that he used Donald Trump and Richard III as character studies to prepare himself for the role of Lex Luthor.
Nice.
Which I thought that was pretty interesting and it makes sense.
I wonder who he used to be Adam Kane here.
I don't know. Whoever it is, well, I don't know. You must not be very interested.
Yeah, it's a little forgettable.
Yeah. Well, apparently he had also been up for the role of Harrison Ford, and he was got so far into the process, he was one of the last three people.
Wait, up for the role of who?
Indiana Jones.
Oh, you said Harrison Ford. So I was really confused.
Sorry. Yeah, he was going to play Harrison Ford as Indiana Jones.
Hi, Harrison. I'm your stunt cock for making love to your wife or something. I don't know.
Yeah, anyways, so he tested for the role of Indiana Jones for Steven Spielberg. And the only other two people that did was Tom Selleck and, of course, Harrison Ford. So Tom Selleck was almost Indiana Jones.
That would have been funny.
Yeah, anyways, John Shea has been in a bunch of shit. Lots of stuff. Some of it's noteworthy. Some of it isn't. But I did see on his IMDb that he was in a show in 2015 called Agent X. And for a second, I was like, was there a spinoff to Mutant X? But no, it's completely unrelated. Just happens to have a similar name.
Nice.
Anyways, moving along, I'm going to go through everybody else pretty quickly because for the most part, even though some of these people have acted quite a bit, their careers are somehow still not notable. we have up first Forbes.
It's because they're Canadian. March. They can't help it.
Yes. Up first, we have Forbes March. That is a real name, or so I'm told. he plays Jesse Kilmartin, who's one of the mutants.
His power is killing people with the name Martin, right? That's why he's...
Yes. You know. Yeah. Oh, I thought his power was modeling Abercrombie and Fitch clothing at a moment's notice.
Former model, yeah, turned guy who kills people named Martin. Got it. Okay.
Yeah, he basically looks like an Abercrombie and Fitch model from, like, the early 2000s. He has been on a few things, but mostly he was on 208 episodes of One Life to Live. He hasn't acted since 2016. And before then, he hadn't acted since 2010, so I don't know. He's not very good in this.
No.
Then we have Victoria Pratt, who plays Shalimar Fox. She's also one of the other two people on the X-Mutants team or whatever, or the Mutant X team, excuse me, under Adam. Victoria, I noticed, was married.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
She was married to the director.
Oh, wow. The plot thickens. And
it does thicken.
And just to throw it in there real quick, Shalimar's code name was going to be Synergy. I'm sorry. Shadow Fox. That's what it was. Shadow Fox. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Those sound very similar. Yeah. I can see how you could. Anyway, she is still acting somehow. Most recently, she was in a movie called Among Wolves that came out last year. She was also in a series called Heartland, which the most important thing about Heartland is that one Nana visitor from Star Trek Deep Space Nine is in it. That's
okay, sure.
But yeah, she's actually been in a lot of stuff. But she's not very good in this.
No.
All right.
Is that our then we have Lauren. Star Trek connection there?
No, I mean, the only real Star Trek connection is the director.
And you don't want to count him?
No, because he's terrible.
Okay, fair enough.
We have Lauren Lee. But you know what's funny is while I was watching this, at times I was like, God, this feels like an episode of Star Trek Discovery with like some of the unnecessary like panning that they do at times. Mm. And some of the weird, oh, we're going to do a weird Dutch angle here for the sake of doing a Dutch angle.
They were trying so hard to just like douse this with style so you don't realize how lame it is.
Yeah, and all they did was highlight how lame it is,
right,
instead. All right, very quickly, everybody else. Lauren Lee Smith, she plays the empath Emma.
Rapport.
Who's kind of the
Rapport was her code name.
Okay, that's like a weird thing to yell in battle. Shadow Fox, rapport, can you come over here and get this villain?
And Jesse, the Abercrombie and Fitch density guy, he was Synergy. That was his name.
Oh, yeah. Was maybe there was going to be a gem in the holograms tie-in.
Yeah, right? that would have made this a lot better.
So for those that don't know, Synergy was the supercomputer AI in Gemini.
I think everyone knows, unless you're like 12. Yeah.
Well, she has also somehow kept acting. As recently as 2022, she was in a TV series called Departure. She was in several episodes there. She was also been in several other series that have had like dozens and dozens of episodes. I'm assuming they're Canadians series where they have less...
Right, they just
expectation.
No, they just go into a soundstage. It snows, so they're never able to leave, and they just sit there and film episode after episode until the snow melts.
Yes. Then we've got Victor Webster, Brennan Mulray. He looks like he would be the one tan Abercrombie and Fitch model used that one year. he has also kept acting somehow. He's not like terrible. He's not as bad as the other ones, but the dialogue is so bad and his acting isn't like good enough to overcome it.
Fuse was Brennan's code name. Fuse.
I mean, so his power is that he can shoot lightning from his hands.
It's more than that. He can control electronics, can't he?
Well, no, he just says he shoots light. That's what he described it as. He can shoot lightning from his hands. Now he does use it to like turn on a car.
It's whatever so the I scene needs it to do.
Whatever voltage you need to get going, right. he's got you.
Right.
He's got the hookup. Anyways, I don't know. He's still acting. It's fine. then we've got Douglas O'Keefe. He plays Frank Thorne. He's like a bad guy with powers working for
Henchman,
the corporation. What was it? What were they called? Genomax. Thank you. He was in the Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, the TV show, which I didn't know there was a Honey, I Shrunk the Kids TV show. Did you?
I did know.
Huh. All right. Well, we might have to cover that one day.
Yeah, sounds fun.
And the last, we have two more people. Tom McCamus, he plays like the main villain, named Mason Eckhart. Mm-hmm. His wig is so bad.
What 80s like pop artist does he not? And by artist, I mean like painter. Who does he remind you of?
Is he like Andy Warhol?
Yeah, you nailed it. Absolutely.
Yeah, he looks like Andy Warhol, yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I feel like this guy is not a bad actor.
Right.
It's just like the stuff isn't great, and he does lean a little bit into the camp of it. I feel like as much as they let him lean into it, because he's kind of like the only one that really seems to be like, hey, the only way this will be good is if we're campy. And then you have John Shea like trying his best,
right,
to like make it work, and because he is a good actor.
Yes.
So he takes John Shea takes it way too seriously, and then this other guy is like trying so hard not to. The last person I want to mention is Cedric Smith. He plays Dr. Paul Breedlove. Mm-hmm. No, Paul Breedlove is not the name of a porn star. But the reason why I brought him up is because, interestingly enough, he played the voice of Charles Xavier, aka Professor X, in X-Men the Animated Series.
Well done, sir. Yes, and he was also in Silk Stockings Jr.
That's right, where the character, all the characters had big asses.
Yes, and he was, Breedlove was his name there too, for some reason.
He was also in Heavy Metal.
Nice. Yeah. Well, I'm glad you picked up on that fun fact, for sure.
And that is, that is the cast worth noting, or we'll be here forever. A lot of people in this.
Right. All right. So we're going to jump right into the movie, the show here. It starts off.
It's quite the cinematic experience, Steve. If you don't believe me, just ask the director.
Yeah.
Like I said, off air, this felt like it was directed by a can of Mountain Dew and edited by a can of Surge.
Let's see. What would have been the hip like energy drink in the early 2000s? It'd probably just still be Red Bull, I'd say. But
well, Surge came out like in 98, I think.
You think so Surge was still around?
Probably.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll go with that.
And Mountain Dew would have been there. You know, this is like the I think this is probably still during the extreme period, maybe the tail end of it.
Oh wait, I got a T-shirt for you here. What's his name again? TJ Scott. It's like, I don't need to go to film school. I just need to drink my Surge. No fear. TJ Scott.
And maybe a little bit of coke.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. The show starts off with these weird, like, green, jaggy lines with, like, digital noise behind it. I don't know if that's supposed to be, like, the Matrix, the mutant Matrix or something, but...
It's the most, like, early 2000s tech look, aesthetic ever.
Yeah, it's lame. Don't know why it's there, but I don't know. It's kind of funny at the same time.
And right off the bat, the music, Steve.
Oh, yeah. Your typical house techno that was very prominent throughout a lot of action movies and TV shows through like the mid-90s all the way to like 2010, I would say.
But like the crappiest royalty-free version. Prodigy, this is not.
Yeah, exactly. Prodigy, more like Alta Vista, you know what I'm saying?
I meant the techno.
Yeah, I know. I know you did.
Okay.
Wow. This died.
Man, Alta Vista, that takes me back. I was an Alta Vista search engine man myself.
I'm sure you were. All right. So we fade into aerial footage of a city at night. I wonder if it's Toronto. We never really find out exactly which city that it is. But yeah, as Yael said, there's 90s style house or techno music playing in the background. Then we cut to, we're inside this sort of bar / club, and we're looking at a computer.
Yeah, I was so confused as to what this was supposed to be because at parts, there's like people kind of dancing like it's a club, but it's super brightly lit. And people are holding drinks in their hand, but there's no bar.
Right. They're just trying to kill two birds with one stone here, I guess.
Yeah.
Try to save some
Basically,
money.
Basically, it looks like they rented out like a ballroom in a hotel.
Yeah.
And just filled it with
people.
Yeah,
it felt like a hotel bar a lot of the times. But so we are looking at a computer monitor. So it's old school CRTs like all throughout this bar, because I guess it's supposed to be the not too distant future or whatever. And there is it's like a website / news show called proxyblue.com. And they're basically talking about it, like all the stuff that's...
Well, the news anchor, quote unquote, in this is like a CG avatar, and it's in the style of not as bad, not as low poly or low res, but it's kind of like the reboot cartoon.
You always rag on like, reboot, man.
Well, I mean, it was kind of reminiscent of it, just like a better version of it, because it's like several years removed in terms of the technology. But yeah, I mean, and it's like the news bulletins being given are by this
badly animated female avatar. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I guess she's supposed to be extreme and in your face or something. I don't know.
But she's like talking about like weird things happening with humans, like basically imply, like, these are just like news stories where it's like, oh, something happened where somebody seemed to have some strange ability.
Yeah, she talks about a teenage girl who falls six stories from a building and walks away unscathed, and then she sort of ends her broadcast with saying, it's getting weirder every day, but the truth is spoken here. So again, I don't know what kind of weird news they have going on in this world, but that's what it is.
And all throughout this, there's like a million camera cuts. There's weird panning. Sometimes there'll be like a green line that like wipes the screen.
There's a weird green circle wipe as the show moves on.
Yeah, there's tons of weird wipes with like green and other colors. Yeah. There's a couple times where there's like a green filter for no reason inside of like a vault, like a bank, and it's like, why is
it's funny because this was during the time, I mean, obviously this is post Matrix, and I just remember all like the tutorials online at the time. It's like, how to get that Matrix like look in your like crappy mini DV videos, and it's just, you know, messing around with a little bit of the contrast and the colors and stuff just to get that weird green hue. I don't know. It takes me back. Anyway.
Yeah. Just for folks who haven't seen this, just think of it like a sepia, but greenish.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like the Reptilian Media logo almost.
Yeah.
So, okay. While this news broadcast is going on, there is a woman in red hurrying her way through the club/bar, pursued by men in suits. This woman is later revealed to be Emma. She then runs into one of our Abercrombie and Fitch models, Brennan. And they sort of have like this weird kind of telepathic link or something. She asks him for help. There's some cheesy...
Telepathically.
Yeah. But he just sort of looks at, gives her a blank look, which there's a lot of blank looks in this show. And she sends him a telepathic vision of herself in black and white, screaming. How art school was that? Do you remember that?
I don't know, man. Like, this is so dumb. And it went on way too long.
Yeah.
There's a lot of stuff that goes on way too long here. There's a lot of padding is what it is. There's a lot of unnecessary slow motion. Sure. There's a lot of repeated shots. There's a few times that, like, some shots, like, they'll show it to you, cut to something, then go back to the same shot, but just reverse it.
Yeah, it's like this guy learned how to, like, direct on, like, early MTV shows. You remember they were always, like, doing the camera all over the place and stuff? But
yeah.
It's all in an effort to try to be Matrix-y, I guess. So anyway, she just sort of escapes through a door, and then we get that circle wipe I was talking about, the green circle wipe. And now she's out on the street, running from a car in the middle of the street, and they are definitely not on a studio back lot, that's for sure.
Dude, I was like, this street is so pristine.
You could eat off that street.
You could. Like, and when I was watching it, because, I mean, the show is cheap. It's pretty obvious. When they got to the street, I was like, oh, they either don't have the staff to clean up like the street, because usually, like, you know, you'll put like trash or whatever, maybe like put some fake graffiti on the, you know, something to make it look lived in. But no, these are just like if imagine a video game with like fresh, clean 3D models, like nothing. No, not a speck of dust or dirt.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that pretty much that paints the perfect picture right there. So a different Abercrombie and Fitch model, this one being Jesse Kilmartin, he moves her out of the way of the oncoming SUV. Then he sort of like glows. He changes his density, which we find out later. That's his power. And the SUV passes right through him. And then a blonde woman shows up, and this is Shalimar Fox. She slowly jumps down, like hovers down from off the top of a building on top of the SUV. Obviously, Again, this is more Matrix stuff. We're going to get to see some pretty lame wire foo. Like, remember when everything had to have wire foo? Remember that?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I think because this is like post-Crouching Tiger also, right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, the wire work is, like, so bad.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, one thing I'll say, I think part of the reason why they hired these actors that aren't so great, like, all the actors are very fit and athletic. Sure. And as best as I could tell, everybody does their own stunts in this.
It does look that way.
They do their own fighting, their own stunts, so I can appreciate that. However, you can also tell that, like, some of these people don't really have, like, fighting training with maybe the
100%
with maybe the exception of the I forgot the character's name already, the darker
Brennan
model. Yeah, his fighting scenes are better, like with his kicks and punches and stuff, but like everybody else, it's like in slow motion, even when it's not in slow motion. And there's a lot of slow motion in this fight scene. Like, dude, this fight scene, it's like 30 seconds worth of a fight scene stretched into like what, like 3 minutes?
Oh yeah. I hear in future episodes there's like they even have breakfast in slow motion.
It's a real Garth Marenghi's Dark Place situation.
It is. Oh man, you nailed it. All right, so the Shalimar Fox, she's on top of the SUV. The driver tries to come out. And then she kicks him in the face. Then they have a cheesy Matrix style wire foo fight. Which she wins by kicking the guy off the top of the SUV. Another henchman fires a gun at the woman in red, but Jesse from before stands in front of her and once again changes his density, and the bullets just bounce off of him. Take that, Superman. You're yesterday's news. So he punches the henchman, causing him to flip in midair before hitting the ground. So I guess his density was so hard he was able to, like, you know, knock the guy across the entire soundstage or whatever.
He also does like a real stupid thing here where he, like, in fact, I think this is how he knocks this guy out, is he, being Jesse, throws like a trash can up in the air.
And then he
like spin kicks it into him. But it's not like some super violent velocity that this trash can achieves. This looks like somebody gently threw it at the guy, and the guy's like, ooh.
Right.
Just like, he's knocked out now.
Yes, thank you for mentioning that.
And it's clearly an empty trash can. Because, again, they don't want to have to clean up afterwards.
Right. That's just more time they don't want to pay for. All right. So one of the heroes, I can't remember, I think it's Jesse, he takes a picture of one of the unconscious henchmen with his ring.
Yeah, with his ring.
And he's like, oh, smile. And then Adam Kane shows up, a.k.a. John Shea, after everyone else does all the hard work. And he tells Emma that she doesn't have to run anymore and that she's among friends. And then they all walk away in slow motion. I typed "they walk away in slow motion" at least 6 times throughout these notes, as we're about to see.
There's a lot of slow motion. This episode is 45 minutes long, you know, 42 minutes long. But I think there's like 35 minutes of actual show. if you cut out the slow motion.
I think you're being a little too
nice. Yeah, I'm not being sarcastic.
Yeah, I'm saying you're being too nice. There's probably less than 35 minutes. But so now we cut to a CGI plane hovering over the city. And now we're inside that plane. And Emma asks Adam, like, who are you people? And he says, we are Mutant X. And then...
Oh, no, that's not what they do. They play the worst song in the entire episode is the theme song.
It was an interesting mix. All right, it's definitely bad, that's for sure. So the theme plays, and we get clips of, obviously, the Mutant X people using all their powers. And it opens with a weird sort of trumpet solo, and then the techno beat, like, kicks in. It's the oddest mix of, like, sort of old school 80s or something. And yeah, it was really bizarre and definitely not good. And, I mean, it's memorable in the way that it's bad. But, yeah, it's memorable for all the wrong reasons.
Do you remember, though, during the theme song, the, things that it says on the screen.
Oh yeah, because of the X-Files, everyone had to have like random words popping up in their openings.
Yeah, like there'd be these words that like one of them was like secret project, yeah. Altered DNA, creates mutants. Right. Was like the next thing is unexpected results.
Slow motion. Supermodels.
Breach of ethics. I'm watching it right now. Defection. Like it's just
sued
like,
by Fox.
Escape. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
The civil lawsuit system is being abused. Like, wait, what?
We need more lawyers. Okay. So yeah, that's fine. Now we're back on the plane. Adam explains the people after her were like, you know, a fringe group of U.S. intelligence. He puts a visual cloak on her, which is basically a fancy way of saying that he blinds her, which I wonder how many times old Kane here has used that on a couple of his dates. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's really weird. He calls it a visual cloak. Mm. So I thought, oh, she's going to make her invisible for some reason. But no, he puts on the side of her head and it makes her blind.
Yeah, her eyes sort of glow white. And it's basically... He doesn't want somehow, right? So they're in a plane like that doesn't really have any windows, and he's afraid that she's gonna see how to get to their base, which they're heading to.
Yeah, and why would he care if she knows?
Right. I guess the idea is maybe he doesn't know if they can trust her yet. I don't know.
But they want her to be on the team. Yeah, it's and it never comes up again.
Nope, it does not. So the plane lands at a tropical island, more sort of bad plane CGI. So can you describe their base, and do you know what other show that we covered where that base shows up?
The outside, or you're talking about the interior, right? 'Cause
yeah.
You don't really see much of the outside.
The inside.
You know, I didn't think it was that bad.
It's not.
Of a set. No. To be honest, I thought it was much better than I expected. To be honest, I mean, you know, it looks like what TV shows and movies in the early 2000s thought something techie and futuristic would look like. A lot of like metal, a lot of half circles, mm-hmm. you know, shit like that. But what was this used in before?
Oh, no, wait, I was mistaken. It's not here. It's the Genomax set that was used before, which we're about to get to. It was used in The Pretender. It's the center.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Yep. Interesting.
But
yeah, the set here is not really too bad. It seems like if they built it, they spent like some money on it.
Oh, I'm sure it was repurposed from something else. But... yeah, so the cloak goes away, and she's taken. It also looks like an 80s toy to me, but I mean that for all the right reasons. There's a lot of waterfalls for no reason, which I remember that was like a cliche for like sci-fi stuff. If you saw Blade Runner, the Blade Runner sequel, there's a lot of like the shadows of like waterfalls and crap like on walls, like for no reason, just because it looks cool, basically.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Adam explains that, everyone else, basically in Mutant X, not him, are all children of Genomax, their gene program that they created, which spawned all these people with powers. And he says, you know, there's thousands of them, and some are good and some are bad. And Adam explains he was the chief biogeneticist of that sort of plan. And then we cut to Genomax, a.k.a. the center. And inside, we see a man with white hair pulling on a face, and that is Mason Eckhart. And he is telling Thorne, who is the head of security, a.k.a. the head henchman, that, you know, their men need to get better, because Thorne is then explaining to him why they failed to capture Emma, basically.
Yeah, and this bad guy, Mason, like, the face he's putting on, like, it looked to me like... If you put like Elmer's glue on your hand and you let it dry off and you peel back the Elmer's glue, it's like that white, semi-see-through, kind of opaque thing. So yeah, he's putting it on like a second type of skin, and we see that his hand is wearing like, not like gloves. It's again like Elmer's glue-ish looking shit on his hands, and we find out that he's very vulnerable, I guess, to diseases because of experiments conducted by Genomax.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's his cover. I mean, we all know that Mason Eckhart doesn't like to wear a condom, you know, and he just...
Well, but his whole body is basically enwrapped, encased in a condom.
Yeah, well, it's too little too late, Mason. I'm sorry. You should have double bagged it beforehand. Now look at you. You're a supervillain. Moving on. So we are back at the Mutant X base, and Emma is now sitting in this sort of like dentist-like chair and only wearing a bra. She's got pants on, but yeah, she's removed her shirt.
But yeah, like, why did they have to have her remove her shirt?
Because it's
a machine that scans, like, what was it, like, for anomalies due to the change in their DNA or whatever.
He said the lasers had to calibrate her DNA, and then I actually typed blah, blah, blah science stuff here. For some reason, she had to only be wearing a bra for this scene. I guess Avia Rod, he called up and was like, we need to sex this show up, or we're not going to get 3 seasons out of it. So, yeah, there they go. They made her just wear a bra. And so she tells Adam she doesn't have any powers, but he scans her with the lasers, blah, 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 and then he leaves. Then Shalimar Fox and Jesse enter. And do you remember what Jesse is wearing in this scene?
No, I don't.
He's wearing, like, a vest, like a Sunday vest, like you would wear to church, but it's sleeveless, and he's not wearing any sleeves underneath it. It's
very nice.
Abercrombie and Fitch, like, douchebag wear. I don't know who would wear it. I don't think I ever saw someone in the early 2000s wearing that in real life, but here you go. It's in Mutant X. Anyway, Fox, she says something. Oh, yeah. She's like, oh, you got scanned by the DNA machine. It helped me get in touch with my powers. And then Emma once again says, I don't have any powers. I'm not freaks like you guys. And Jesse,
he gets offended.
Yeah, he gets offended and walks away. His feelings
get hurt.
And then Fox.
Yeah, and this had one of my least favorite tropes in, like, superhero live action media in particular, which is, like, calling one of the people with powers a freak. Mm-hmm. Like, that's so overdone.
Right. I mean, and it's especially prevalent in X-Men stuff, mm-hmm. for sure. So Fox sort of glows her eyes at Emma, and then she also leaves. And now we are back at the bar, and Brennan is there, the guy who was in the cold open, and he is meeting with two dudes, and they're all wearing leather jackets, and it's clear they're all sort of friends. And then we cut back to the bad guys, and Mason is talking to Dr. Breedlove, who is the head of, what did I say the name of that thing was again? Genomax, that's what it is, yeah.
Yes.
And basically he tells Mason that, he's too hard on Adam. He shouldn't blame him for ruining his immune system. Because, again, they had a three-way. No one wore any protection. And, it just happened.
Things happen. Yeah,
exactly. So Breedlove says that he's reconstructed the database that Adam Kane took with him when he left. He did that so they can right all the wrongs of Genomax, basically. But, it's clear that Eckhart does not feel that way. And now we're in a hallway. Mason says he's talking to Thorne. He says he should have killed Adam when he had the chance. And now we cut. We're back with the Mutant X. Adam and Fox are at a loss talking about Emma. They're like, oh, we've tried everything. And then they're like, oh, well, we're just going to have to get her out of town. Cut two, we are on the roof of a parking lot, and we pan around Brennan. He shoots a bolt of lightning at a cool car. Then he takes off his jacket to once again reveal no sleeves. Everyone in this world, they love leather, but they hate sleeves, you hell.
Well, they got to have some kind of breathability somewhere in their clothing, and... it's certainly not for us to see that this dude is jacked.
Right, exactly. So then he gets in the car and he drives it around. And it's weird because it looks like he drives right back to the place where he drove away from, but he shows up at a different parking lot on a different roof where his boys from before in the bar are waiting for him. Let me see here. Starts with his power. Drives it. Okay, so now we are at the bad guy lair, and Mason and Thorne are talking, and they meet with Breedlove. Breedlove says he's going to the press in a week, and then Thorne says to him, you know, you got to let me know in advance. And then they leave, and now we're back on, I think I jumped ahead before, we're back on the roof with Brennan and his boys, and they meet with
a guy. Well, there's a lot of, like, cutting back and forth, yes. Especially, like, as the episode goes on, like, they'll literally cut to somebody to say a word.
Yep.
And then cut to, like, a completely different scene where somebody else might say two words, then come back to where you were at three scenes ago. Like, it's a mess. It's exhausting.
Yes. And, so this guy named Mr. Carter shows up, and I guess he is Brennan's client. Carter gives them a key and says that they have to get another key from a vice president or something in order to activate them at the same time. Mr. Carter then gets in his car and leaves, and Brennan and his boys play a little game of grab ass. And, like, I'm trying to, like, sort of piece together what, like, why did Brennan have to drive Mr. Carter's car to a different roof on a different building? Couldn't they have all just met the first time?
I always thought it was the same roof.
So he drove it away. His boy showed up, and he drove back, and then Mr. Carter shows up. That doesn't make any sense to me either.
I guess just to show that he's just a wild and crazy guy.
Yeah, and then they make a comment. It's like, oh, you were driving the client's car. Oh, you're so crazy, Brennan.
Well, the other two guys were like, you know how much we could get for this at a chop shop? It's like a Lamborghini, and he's like, no, I got my eyes set on something higher than that. And then we find out, like, and I guess these other two guys didn't know that this was their client's car.
Right.
So, you know, and then at the end, he's like, now do you bozo see why? Because the client comes and drives away the car. Right. And he's like, now do you bozo see why we can't take this to the chop shop?
Right. Yeah. I mean, they're trying to show that not only is Brennan, I guess, smarter, but also even though he is a thief, he's like a good thief, or he's got some sort of ethics. I basically look at Brennan as your Kmart Gambit here, basically. So now we are with Emma and Adam. They enter a bookstore, and there's a guy there named Ruby who runs the bookstore, and he senses their arrival because he's a telepath or whatever. He also dresses like, I guess we're not allowed to say that word on YouTube, but yeah, I get the sense that Ruby hangs around the kids section at the bookstore. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, yes. I can definitely see that.
All right. I'm glad I'm not the only one. So Adam leads Emma to the back of the bookstore where he pulls a book, and, like, literally the bookcase swings, and he goes back, and it's like a safe house where two other mutants, Allison and Vince, are hanging out. They're basically using their powers to work on something in the back there. Vince is messing with wires, and this Allison lady is using a blowtorch to do something. Adam says it's a mutant safe house. They're going to get her a new identity to get her out of town. Now anything else to add about that scene?
No. other than, is this where we had, like, seen Oh, yeah. Because the guy at the library, or the bookstore, Ruby, or whatever. Yeah, he's such a weird... He makes very strange acting choices. At first I thought he was supposed to be blind.
Yeah. Right.
Right? Doesn't he play it like he's blind, but then he's not blind?
Yeah. It's it would have been better if he'd have been blind. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fine either way. It was just confusing the way it was handled, but I did think it was dumb that the one girl that they meet at this safe house or whatever, like, that's like, she's like, I don't know what the hell she's doing. She's like fixing a pipe.
Right.
With like a blowtorch, and rather than just use her hand to use the blowtorch, which would be way easier, she like very awkwardly uses her
telekinesis,
mind powers to make it levitate, and it's like very awkwardly levitating. It's like,
yeah, well, you got to get those mutant powers in there any way you can, I guess.
I do want to say though, the girl with the levitation powers, the character's name is Allison, played by Ingrid Hart. I did think she was one of the better actors besides John Shea in this.
She was good, but it was sad that a lot of her, whenever she had to communicate with Emma, a lot of her sentences had to start with girl because, you know.
Yeah, it was a lot of that. Yeah, yeah, well, because she's like the one, like, you know, black actor. God, so yeah. They had to.
I'm glad you mentioned that. Like, God, the cast is so bland just because they all, they're all like too perfect, all too model-y looking. And I mean, I don't want to say
they pretty much, they all are just like good looking white model types,
yes,
with the exception of the main villain, mm-hmm, and the 70-year-old man.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they needed a little more. I mean, even if they were going to have them be all white, like, couldn't someone have a scar or something? They, you know, usually they...
Something to give them a little bit of character.
Yeah, yes, please. Any kind of character.
Yeah, because much like the street that is shown, the alley that is shown early on, everyone is pristine.
Right.
You know, there's nothing, like, interesting about,
mm-hmm,
them. Honestly, even Allison, black actress, mm-hmm, that does the levitating and stuff, I mean, she's a very attractive, you know,
absolutely,
model-esque... Mm-hmm. Lady too, it just happens to be that she can act.
Everyone's 2% body fat. Yeah.
So hey, at least Ingrid has a little bit of acting talent.
Sure.
So
absolutely. So now we're back at Mutant X HQ. Fox and Jesse have fabricated an ID for Emma. Now we're back at Genomax. Breedwill types on a typewriter, and at first I was like, and he's got like a computer. It's on the other
side. A computer right behind him.
But the whole reason why they did that is so they can do this. All right, so he's typing up his letter to the press, apologizing for the DNA manipulation, which is the most uncorporate thing you could possibly do. But for the sake of the story, like, we'll go with it. Mason then basically comes in and takes the letter. You know, he prints it out. It's on actual paper and says that he disagrees. Thorne uses his telekinesis to take Breedwell's cell phone away. And then who came up with this? Okay, so for some reason in Breedwell's office, there is an old school vinyl playing jukebox just sitting there in his office. And he uses the records. He with his telekinesis, he levitates the records.
Right, they float in the air.
Yeah, he makes them float in the air, and we just see them go off frame towards Breedwell, and you hear him scream. So he kills Breedwell with vinyl.
Yeah, the thing that killed me though is, so you know, like, one record comes up in the air, two records go up in the air, then they just spin forever. Mm. Cut to Breedwell. Cut to the records. Cut to Breedwell. Cut to the records. Then another shot of more records coming up. Like, this, it takes like almost a minute before these records actually like fly into him. And then, Steve, do you remember though the shot of Breedwell's body, his bloody body covered with pierced by the records?
Not very well.
You don't remember it because it doesn't exist.
Right.
They never show him dead.
Yeah.
They just like look down and point up. Oh, he's dead. Too bad he had to die over there out of camera view.
Well, I would say even for a syndicated show in the early 2000s, I mean, well, first off, it would look ridiculous to have a man, you know, killed by vinyl. But that would probably be a little much for a syndicated show in the early 2000s.
I don't know. You could have had like a record like in his head or
yes,
something in his like forehead.
You could have gotten away with that. But yeah, they didn't want to spend the money. So that's why the scene wasn't there. So now we cut to, I forgot. I have to add my favorite line here. So yeah, he's dead. Mason takes the database. He burns the letter, which was the whole reason why it was typed out to begin with. And then they walk away in slow motion. Thank you. That's going on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
So
does the building explode or catch on fire? It doesn't, right?
No.
Okay.
So
sorry. I just, when I was watching it, that's what I thought was going to happen.
No, they can't. I mean, that they would kill their base, the Genomax base. So yeah.
Yeah, I know, but
you wanted it to happen.
I knew that that wouldn't make sense, but it wouldn't put it past them to do something that didn't make sense because they had already done that.
And then cut back, and then Eckhart's just like, well, we've just finished the construction on the new Genomax. Like,
well, and then you know what's weird? Later on when like Mason Eckhart is like, you know, addressing like the employees, he's like, oh, one of our own disgruntled, you know, mutants broke in and killed him. It's like, it seems like these powers are pretty specific. Yeah. Is it really that hard to figure out? Would it be that hard to, like, at the very least narrow down?
Yeah, right. Well, you know, it could be. It's his cover story for basically starting up this. Yeah. He basically starts up the Wildcats for Genomax.
It just seems like killing him in, like, a way that requires powers
right.
for the death was stupid.
Yeah, they could have just easily...
makes him look dumb as a villain.
Yeah, shot him or strangled him, but this is yeah, Mutant
make it look
X,
like,
baby.
Make it look like he killed himself, yeah. You know, hang him.
Yeah, I mean, all right, if you have telekinesis, you could, in theory... Like, I mean, all right, so Breedwell was an older man. I'm sure you could easily just, like, mess with the heart and make him have a heart attack. Like, but I think we're thinking...
throw him down the stairs, make him, like, yes. For, you know, I don't know, whatever.
Yeah, we're doing too good of a job here writing a Mutant X episode.
Maybe his power only lets him move things that aren't alive.
he can only move things from, like, the 80s, like like vinyl.
Oh, maybe that's what it is. He can only move something if a hipster would own it. Rah, it's a very specific power.
Oh man, that would have been funny if Thorne was a hipster instead of just a very blank.
Yeah, if you've got a handlebar mustache, you are in danger.
All right, so now we're in a bank. Brennan and his boys infiltrate the bank. Everything is green for no reason other than because the
Yeah, this is like the green like sepia. Stop. I mean, I know Seppi's like brown or whatever, but right. Yeah, it's like this green filter mm-hmm. over it. And oh my God. So as they're breaking into this vault, one of the goons, I think they're all wearing trench coats except for the Abercrombie.
All
guy.
Leather coats. Yep. Dual wielding guns.
But he jumps up on a counter. He's got two guns and he keeps spinning around like a ballerina.
It was so like, lame. Oh man.
And they use like, they show him spinning like, I don't know, like what, five or six different shots.
Too many times.
Five or six times. I think it's only two shots. And I know one time they definitely reverse it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like the dumbest, lamest way to like keep an eye on your prisoners by rapidly spinning your guns like around.
It was hilarious. I mean, I'm gonna admit, I found a lot of the over stylization hilarious and entertaining just because it's so bad.
At first I did, but like about halfway through, like I just found it all very distracting.
Oh, 100%.
And I think part of the problem is like I said earlier, there'd be like a scene, they'd cut to when the two girls are outside or whatever, cut to them. The one girl says a word, green wipe, cut to something else, green wipe. Then John Shea, Adam, he turns around in reaction to something somebody else said, another wipe. You know, there'd be like five cuts in like 3 seconds.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is basically, in addition to the Matrix style, this is like a Michael Bay style of like shooting where, like, nothing is really happening, but for some reason there's like six shots of someone turning around to look at something just because he can't settle on one shot. Like, it's it's bad. It's so bad that it's laughable, but it's also very irritating.
It's almost like if Hype Williams directed a remember Hype Williams
didn't he
Hype Williams directed all. He did all those like Puff Daddy videos, right?
He did direct a movie. Oh, worry, we'll have to
Belly.
It's supposed to be just pure excess and like no real plot or anything. Kind of like this. So as Yael was saying, there's leather coats, dual wielding of guns, spinning around, green tint, and all of this over incredibly lame techno / house music. So. And then now we're back at Mutant HQ. Fox gives Emma her new ID. Allison says she understands why Emma doesn't want to join Mutant X. Because not every mutant is a hero, Yael. And you can see the gears turning in Emma's brain because, you know.
Emma's like, I'm a hero.
Yeah. Exactly. And don't you love how, gosh, man, every X-Men movie, or every, I guess, sort of mutant superhero thing around this time period, it always has to start out with the recruiting of a new like mutant or person or whatever. It happened right. in X-Men the Animated Series. It happened in X-Men the Movie. It happened in Ultra Force. And, it happened in Wildcats. And now it's happening here on Mutant X. It's like...
I mean, I get why. Sure. Because now there's somebody you have to explain everything to, right. which in turn explains it to the audience. Mm-hmm. So in a way, I don't mind, even though it is overused a lot, because it's a way to show and tell at the same sure. time. Stuff that otherwise would just turn into like telling,
right?
You know,
right, right.
But yeah, it is definitely a trope that's used a lot.
Yeah, for sure. I mean,
one thing I did appreciate, at least I appreciate at the beginning of this journey, is that like, you know, very early on, like you said, when the show starts, you know, the first thing is in that bar/club/ballroom, whatever it is, and then the next scene they're outside and boom, there's already people using their powers. Mm-hmm. So we didn't have to like have all this thing where it's like a bunch of people having to discover their powers and this and that. So I was at least happy that okay, we don't have to go through all that.
Yeah, the special effects and the amount of times that it gets used, I mean, it's at least better than how it was used in Generation X, when they hardly ever used their powers at all. And when they did use it, it looked absolutely terrible.
The flip side is that the special effects do look pretty bad most of the times their powers are used.
Yes, it's true.
Like the density changes look really bad. Mm-hmm. And the lightning, there's a couple times it looks okay, mm-hmm. but it mostly looks like pretty bad.
Indeed, I agree. So now we are with Brennan and his boys. They deliver whatever it was they stole from the bank to Carter. And then basically Brennan tells his boys that he gets more money because he's got the powers or whatever. And that's just how it is. And you can tell the one guy, his name is Tony.
That's not what happens.
What happens then?
So they steal the stuff and the client's like, and one of the goons is like, they're meeting with the client. He's like, oh, yep, we got it all. You know, 2 million from this, blah, blah, 2 million from that, yada, yada, a total of 10 million. Mm-hmm. And then our mutant guy tells the client, and you mean 20 million total, right? Because you're on the insurance paperwork, so you're getting another 10 million. He's talking to the client. And then the client's like, oh, that's right, kid. You guys better keep an eye on this one. He's smart, you know. Then that's what the other guy's like, that's not fair, we get chump change. And that's when the guy with the mutant power says, well, that's the way the world works. It's not because he has powers. Mm-hmm. They're talking about the other guy getting $20 million because, you know, he had the insurance.
I see. All right, I get it now.
How dare you miss this importantly well-written piece of
Hey, Howard Chaykin, despite Mutant X, he is a legend in the comic book industry. But anyway, basically,
yeah. But what's his face? The sorry to cut you off, Steve. But to your point, though, the goon that you know has all this stuff explained to him mm-hmm. is kind of mad at the mutant guy's power. Like the way he says it, you can tell he's annoyed with it. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, he does end up betraying him, which is what you were about to get to.
Yes, yeah. So Tony, the ginger, like, boy of Brennan, he gets mad about not getting more money. And so we're back in that same bar. There's only one bar in the entire Mutant X world, and it's this one. And he gets on that, at the aforementioned, like, newscast website thing. And because they're asking
about, which I guess can also, there's a webcam on this
thing
somehow.
Mm-hmm. And
cause he's like talking to the news now directly. I don't know.
Exactly. And he's like, oh, you want stories about people with powers, right? And it's like, well, I'm going to tell you one about this guy named Brennan. And then we cut away to Genomax. Mason is addressing, like, via, again, computer monitor, CRT computer monitor. He's addressing all of the Genomax employees. He tells them all Breedwell was murdered, as Yael said before, by just like, I don't know, a disgruntled mutant or something. And he's creating a genetic security agency to handle all the mutants. And then Thorn...
And he also says that the murder shows like that they need to be even more secretive.
Right.
So kind of does the opposite of what the guy that they killed wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And he also starts off by saying, I'm increasing all the department's budgets effective immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay.
This is all very, very Disney. This is how they would handle it for sure.
But all the employees clap at the end of it.
Of course.
So they're all happy about it.
Same. That's how it would go at Disney as well. So Thorn turns on a monitor for Mason, and it's Brennan's boy ratting him out. Thorn is basically like, hey, we got a lead on another mutant here. Check this out. And then camera pans over to a Genomax testing lab, and they basically just show us more of what's going on inside of Genomax. And I mean, it's an impressive base for sure. It's a good thing they didn't dismantle it after the Pretender.
Well, and there is a cool shot here. I you know, to give the director credit, where they're like, the camera is like basically just like panning backwards, mm-hmm. The whole time going through like a tube kind of a thing, but they ruin it because like halfway through the shot, they do like a weird wipe or cut. I can't remember what it was, but they do like some kind of weird graphical thing, even though it's not done panning backwards, mm-hmm. and like interrupts it. I'm like, what are you doing? Just relax. This is a good shot. Like, are you not confident in what you're putting together here?
It's like old TJ. He and the editor just did so much coke and so many bottles of or cans of Surge that this is what they came up with. Now we're back at Mutant X HQ. Adam tells Fox that Breedwell was his mentor, and they're all looking sad. He's basically sad that Breedwell is dead. And now we are at the docks, basically. Allison and Emma exit a VW bug, and I guess they were going to send Emma on her way. Emma says that she sees the guys who were after her. And Allison looks and she sees them and we see them as the viewers. And then she tries to do something. But then when she turns back, she realizes that it was just a ruse, that Emma was making her see the guys and Emma is already gone. So I'm going to ask you, I know the answer to this. What's wrong with Emma's like ruse here? Why doesn't it make sense?
Wait, you're talking about like Emma when she's, sorry, I was trying to find out more about the editor. You're talking about like when, she's talking to, the tan guy, whatever.
No. So they're at the docks here. Allison is going to send Emma on her way. Emma says, oh, those are the guys who were after me. And Allison like looks over and I guess she attempts to like do something to them. But then she realizes it's not the guys, that it was just a ruse set by Emma. Then she looks over and Emma is gone. She drove away in the VW bug. Why doesn't it make sense?
Well, it was the guys that were after her earlier, but doesn't she like make them look like, oh yeah, this whole thing was really confusing. So I guess I see now what you're saying. Emma made Allison think that these two guys in suits were the guys that were coming after her, and then like we see like this flash and they're not really in suits, they're like wearing like worker clothes for the dock.
No, they were just regular dock workers that she used to make them look like those henchmen.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah, okay. So to me it doesn't make any sense, because why does Allison need to even, she doesn't even know what those guys look like, so they could have just been anyone. Right?
I guess she just had to make them not look like they were
dock workers.
But I mean, she could have just said, yeah, it's them. They're in disguise.
Yeah, exactly. So it was an excuse to use mutant powers or whatever, which this is Mutant X, so it's allowed. But it doesn't make any sense. And it just, if anything, this really makes Emma look like an idiot, basically. I mean, these people are trying, but she does say that she doesn't want to like disappear and change her life or whatever. But Adam and everyone is telling her, like, you know, these guys, these Genomax guys, they're going to keep coming after you, so you have to hide. but she's selfish, I guess. And so, yeah, she just drives away in, I guess it's Allison's VW bug. It just drives away.
Yeah.
So Allison calls Adam, tells her what happened, tells him what happened. And then Fox says they have to find her. Cue techno music, a lot of random computer stuff going on. Fox is on a motorcycle looking for Emma. Emma finds Brennan at the bar. They talk about their powers for a minute. I love how just Emma is just completely calm. She's not afraid of like anyone coming to like get her or anything. And this I thought was interesting. And they're very calm, sort of calm. They're basically having a date, basically. Like they ran into each other again at a bar. And Emma finally admits that she has powers. And she says that she used those powers to manipulate her dates. What do you think of that?
No. She says that she used her powers to manipulate people coming, that she worked like at a retail store and she became like the top seller by manipulating people. She didn't say anything about her dates.
Oh, yes, she did. I have it written right here.
Did she?
Yeah, and she was like, yeah. And I also used it to, I mean, she didn't.
Oh yeah.
She didn't use the word manipulate, but she's like, yeah, I also use it on my dates. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. What's up with consent these days, huh? All right. So anyway, Thorne shows up. The team closes in on Emma. Thorne asks Brennan to join Genomax. Emma, who has stepped away, senses all the people Thorne has murdered. Because again, she's not a telepath. She's an empath or whatever. Brennan turns him down, punches him in the stomach, and he and Emma run away. There is a slow motion foot chase. Brennan uses his powers to knock Thorne off his feet again. They check to see if he's... Oh, this part was stupid. They go back. All right, so they basically have a fight. Brennan wins, knocks Thorne off his feet. And like Emma's like, I wonder if he's dead. So they go back to check on him to see if he's dead, and he's not. And then more bad...
Yeah, he just pops right up. And he's like, oh, didn't you think that... You know, we'd be prepared for somebody like you.
Yeah, and then now they're surrounded by even more henchmen. The bad guys advance on Brennan. There's some more bad wire foo. A lot of bad wire foo. Fox shows up, and again, she descends from, like, a ceiling. Like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Is that, like, her thing? I guess she has to do it. It's in her contract. She has to descend from somewhere.
Yeah. It looks like it doesn't seem like she can fly. She can just like kind of float.
Yeah, I mean, the idea for her is that she's got like cat powers, basically. She's basically like a tigra, if you will. But obviously she doesn't look like tigra. But anyway, Jesse shows up.
But then like in this fight scene, again, what's the tan guy's name again?
Brennan.
Brennan. So Brennan doesn't use his electricity on any of these other henchmen who don't have powers.
Yeah, I mean, like, and yeah, that's,
they just have like a fist fight.
And the best part here, yeah, because there's a lot of stuff that doesn't make sense, and I'm gonna get to it in just 1 second. Jesse shows up. He uses his powers. Thorne finally decides to use his powers because, like, why didn't he use it at the beginning? He levitates some sort of like shock device. I think it's the shock stick the Mountie used to use. and then Thorne decides, oh yeah, so he throws the shock stick at Brennan, and then he pulls a gun. It's like, so he waited. This is just like in RoboCop the series, or the animated series, the first one, when RoboCop tries to fight the bad guys at the end, and finally he decides to pull his gun, and that solves all the problems. So Adam shows up, and then the bad guys retreat, and then that is basically, there's sort of like they talk a little bit.
A standoff between the good guys and bad guys.
Yeah, Adam
shows up.
Yeah, and then the bad guys retreat, like for no reason.
And they take Brennan with them, and Adam's like, oh, that's fine, let him take him, and this isn't over, we'll get him some other time. If you're Brennan, you're like, what the fuck?
This is almost like when... You know, when the wrestlers go into the ring and then the other wrestlers leave and they're walking like, you know, back towards the Titantron. But for some reason, the other wrestlers are stuck inside the ring and they can't get out to chase them. You know?
Right.
So,
and they're like pretty evenly matched at this point, numbers wise.
Yeah.
You know, it's about the same number of people on each side, except one side has people full of powers.
Right. And then one guy decided to pull a gun, which I guess is still means something in this world full of people.
Guns solve everything.
Guns.
That's right, baby.
but like there was no reason for them to just sort of separate and walk away. Like, you know, I feel like usually in these kind of scenarios, because like obviously they want, you know, both sides to sort of retreat so they can fight another day. You know, there would be like a cave-in or something, or maybe like, oh man, it's the cops. We can't let them see that we're mutants. We'll have to run this way, and then the bad guys will run this way, and then we will fight next week. Nah. Nobody bothered to do anything like that. It's just like, we'll get you and next time, Thorn.
Where was this fight taking place? Because it looked like a very giant open public space, but I guess they couldn't afford any extras because nobody else was there.
Yeah, it was like an airport, or maybe like leading to like a subway,
like a bus station,
yeah,
or something.
Bus station,
yeah,
or subway, something like that. Yeah. They never have extras unless you're in that bar area. There's like zero extras in the Mutant X world. But that is basically the end of the Mutant X pilot, unless you have anything else to add.
No, that pretty much covers this.
All right, let's do this thing. All right, not Yahel Velasquez. Do you think that Mutant X should be remembered for all of human history and mutant history, or tossed into the black void of obscurity, never to be heard from again?
This should be tossed into the black hole of obscurity. It's pretty bad. Mm-hmm. And it's not like, it's not like a fun time capsule. You think it would be, right, with all like the hyper strange editing and like just the early 2000s aesthetic of it all. Mm-hmm. But it's pretty bad and bland and boring. The actors are boring. If this could have been fun, if everybody put in like a campy performance or something.
Yes, they took it way too seriously. I think they were trying to maybe strike the same kind of tone as the movies. I mean, it was clear, you know, Marvel, they just wanted to have their own syndicated X-Men, even though they had sold the rights to Fox. So, they were going to do everything they can to do that without infringing on those rights, even though they got sued anyway. You say it's not a fun time capsule. I think I had a little more fun than you watching this. I mean, it's definitely not good, and you're right. It is bland and boring. I wonder if it gets better because, as we've seen, I mean, we usually watch the pilot for these kind of shows, and sometimes the pilots aren't good, and it takes a while for this show to find its stride, and I wonder if that's the case with Mutant X, but based on the evidence we've witnessed today, this is going to be a forget for me. For all those reasons, you are obliterated, Mutant X.
The heathens have spoken. You are obliterated.
All right, but let us know if you think differently and why in the comments below. That is pretty much it for Mutant X. Did you have something else you wanted to add there?
I did. Tom McCamus, I don't know why I have to talk about that name, the Andy Warhol lookalike that plays the main villain. Mm-hmm. So apparently he leaves the show as a regular, at least after the first season. They write him out. Mm-hmm. He does come back from time to time, but the reason why he was written off is that he originally is a theater actor. Mm-hmm. And that's what he likes doing. And he didn't feel like he was getting to show off his talents enough on the show. And it kind of explains, too, I think, like some of his delivery. It's very theatrical. Sure. But maybe John Shea got in his head because he said that after he left the show, he went back to the theater and he went to immediately perform in Richard III.
That's so crazy. I mean, I get it, but I mean, I would never turn down a TV show for
Yeah, make a bunch of money first and then go back.
Yeah, well, maybe he felt like he'd made enough at that point.
Well, Steve, I'm sorry that he's not a sellout like you, but
I've been trying to sell out. It's just not working.
I have somebody else on the series that didn't sell out. Okay. One Forbes March. So as I mentioned earlier, he had stopped acting like after, I think, 2010 or something like that was his last thing. You want to know what he quit acting to do?
Oh, I don't know.
You're never going to guess, Steve. You're never going to guess.
Become a police officer?
No, I mean you're really never going to guess.
Okay, tell me.
He left Hollywood to move to New York and created the New York Firewood Company. That's right. He went into the firewood business.
Wow.
And it's still around. apparently, it's like the biggest firewood company in the Northeast. His website is up. He's interviewed not too long ago by Bon Appetit. And this firewood is insanely expensive. You can buy a 4-foot rack of mixed hardwood from $250.
Wow. And you're going to burn this wood.
Yes, an 8-foot rack. Oh, that's going to cost you $345 starting.
Man, this must be the finest wood ever cut, basically.
Yeah. Well, maybe it can change its density based on your preferences. I don't know, but anyways, yeah, he left Hollywood to be, because he loves wood.
Wow.
I guess.
Well, I forgot to mention that there is a Marvel comic by the name of a Mutant X. It doesn't have anything to do with the show, but they did make a comic book prequel for Mutant X. That's all about sort of what happened with Adam Kane at the beginning. If anyone is interested, I'm certainly not. Yeah, I think that's gonna do it. Anything you want to mention about yourself or the world before we sign off here?
I'm still working on my video. I've been posting on Twitter some clips and like images from some of the 3D scenes that I'm working on for it. I also, if you are a gamer, you can find me on Arzette, the Jewel of Faramore, which it's available like on everything, Switch, PC, on every console. There is a pre-order for the physical editions now. But yeah, the game's gotten like great reviews. It's selling really well. Pick that up.
Nice.
And I play the voice of the announcer.
Sweet. All right. Well, that is our show, everyone. Make sure you subscribe if you're not, and share and tell all your friends to help us fight that YouTube algorithm. And we'll see you next Sunday as we continue to unearth more obscure media only on Obscurity Now. See you next week. Bye-bye.
You've been enjoying Obscurity Now, a podcast that's recorded live to tape and streamed to Twitch and YouTube. Subscribe so you never miss an episode or hilarious quip. Take us with you by following the download links provided in the show notes to wherever you get podcasts. And take notice of our various social media links if that's what you're into. I'm not here to judge. And make sure you join us live next week at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific, as we continue to discuss more obscure media only on Obscurity Now.